Our presentation this morning is Healing Communities Through Kinship, presented by our pastoral minister, Mary Sue Roydeboek.
I am Mary Sue Roydeboek, and my pronouns are she, her, hers. As the pastoral minister here at Prairie, it is my privilege to introduce you to the extraordinary work and life of Father Greg Boyle. In 2011, Father Boyle received the California Peace Prize and was inducted into the California Hall of Fame. In 2014, President Obama named Father Greg Boyle a champion of change. And in 2024, President Biden awarded Father Boyle with the Presidential Medal of Freedom. My first encounter with the work and insights of Father Greg was about 13 years ago. A personal story here. I was helping at a food pantry in Milwaukee because I wanted to make a difference. I wanted to help. There were several people arriving at the community center, and a few were women with children from the nearby shelter. As we were passing out supplies, I overheard a child say to her mom, referring and pointing to me, "I will ask her where the potty is, Mommy. She will know. She's not like us." At that moment, I felt a profound sense of sadness and a little shame, not because the child identified me as someone who might know where to find the toilet, rather, she perceived me to be not like us. This was disturbing to me, but I was not sure what to do with it. So I did what I often do. I talked to my husband, Tim, as he is both good at listening and asking me hard questions. No definite answer, but a really good discussion surrounding the difference between looking good and being good. A lot to grapple with. A few months later, Tim was listening to the radio program On Being with Krista Tippett. On her show, she was interviewing Father Greg Boyle, a Jesuit priest from LA who worked with thousands of gang members. Tim immediately called me. I was out of town, and he said, and I could hear a crack in his voice, "I think you will like what this guy has to say about compassion. He is the real deal." Tim was right. As I listened to his story, I thought, there it is, an insight, an invitation to see service as mutual and compassion as a means of kinship. This intrigued and challenged me. A bit more about Father Boyle. In 1988, Father Greg Boyle worked with the poorest parish in Los Angeles with the highest concentration of gang activity in the city. Father Boyle witnessed the devastating impact of gang violence on his community during the so-called Decade of Death that began in the late 1980s and peaked at 1,000 gang-related killings. And that was in 1992. In the face of criminal justice policies of suppression and mass incarceration as the means to end gang violence, he, along with the parish and community members, adopted what was a radical approach at that time: treat gang members as human beings. He had seen firsthand how gang members needed a place for healing and training where they could reimagine their lives. And through the help of the local and greater community, Homeboy Industries was born. Homeboy Industries is a nonprofit organization founded to build a pathway of reentry for gang members. As of today, 10,000 former gang members walk through those doors each year. Today, Homeboy Industries is the largest gang member rehabilitation and reentry program in the world. Father Greg was asked, why these kids were joining gangs. And he said, hopeful kids don't join gangs. Gang members have endured a great deal of emotional, physical, and psychological pain, and they cannot imagine a world without it. So they keep inflicting it. Over the years, I have read Greg Boyle's books, listened to his interviews, and had the privilege of hearing him speak in person. When he is invited to speak, he always brings a few of the homies, which is his endearing word for his family at Homeboy Industries. When hearing these young people speak, I am humbled by their courage and strength to overcome the hands they were dealt. I always wonder when I hear their stories, how would I, could I carry such wounds? One of the stories that I will never forget was from a young man named Jose. When Jose was 9, his mom drove him to an orphanage in Baja. She told the orphanage director, "I found this kid on the road." She then left Jose at the orphanage. He was there for 3 months before his grandmother came to get him. Jose's mother beat him every day. In elementary school, he wore 3 t-shirts because blood seeped through the first 2. The other kids would say, "Hey, fool, it's 100 degrees in here." Jose then said, "I was ashamed of my wounds. Now, I run my fingers over the scars. My wounds are my friends. How can I heal the wounds if I don't welcome them?" When Father Greg is asked about both his decision to be a priest and to work with his population, he said, "It's not about saluting a set of beliefs. Rather, it's standing with those on the margins, because that's the only way the margins will disappear." He went on to explain, "We stand with the poor, the powerless, the voiceless. We stand with those whose dignity has been denied, with those whose burdens are more than they can bear. We stand with the easily despised and those who've been left out. We stand with the demonized so the demonizing will stop, and with the disposables so that the day will come when we stop throwing people away." And it was these next words that resonated so strongly with me. "You don't go to the margins to make a difference. You go to the margins so that the folks at the margins make you different." And from my lens, I could see our UU values and principles in action, not only the principles surrounding the inherent worth and dignity of every person or compassion, but transformation. Transformation is one of our core values that encourages continuous personal and societal growth. Transformation that promotes justice and working towards a more loving and equitable world. For me, the transformation was an expansion of thought, moving towards the idea of helping to build community through kinship. Hearing a few of Father Greg's stories from his voice are such a treat. He brings a great humor in his delivery. As I share a few clips, you will hear how his beliefs have guided his life's work. They are strongly rooted in a Jesus that always includes and a loving God that does not judge. These are part of his story. In addition, you will hear mention of tattoo removal. These are not beautiful pieces of art like many tattoos are. Instead, they are outward signs of inward pain, and many are related to gang violence. Enjoy.
Tattoo removal. No place on the planet removes more tattoos than we do. We have a designated clinic, 3 laser machines, 29 doctors, 800 treatments. A month. And it was all started because of a guy named Frank who wandered out of Corcoran State Prison, 2 days out of prison. And he wanders into my office and he's sitting in front of me And tattooed on his forehead like a banner, or like a billboard, and pardon my French, it says, fuck the world. Yeah. And he said, you know, I'm having a hard time finding a job. And I said, Frank, you know, maybe we could put our heads together on this one, you know. So anyway, I found a doctor who donated some time, and little by little, we chipped away at his forehead. And we have our chips and salsas and all the Ralphs and Food for Less, and we have Homeboy Diner, the only place you can get food in the city hall. We're about to move into the LAX American Airlines terminal. We have put a restaurant there. Homeboy Bakery, Homeboy Silkscreen, Homeboy Homegirl Merchandise, where we sell our logo stuff. We're in 24 different farmers markets. Where we have the solar panel installation training program. And Homegirl Cafe, where women with records, young ladies from rival gangs, waitresses with attitude, will gladly take your order. Last year, you know, at the cafe, we had a visit from Diane Keaton, the Oscar-winning actress, movie star, Annie Hall, Godfather movies. And she's there with a regular guy who's there once a week. And her waitress this day is Glinda. And Glinda's a homegirl, been there, done that, tattooed, been to prison, the felon, the parolee. She doesn't know who Diane Keaton is. And so she's taking her order. And Diane Keaton says, what do you recommend? And Glinda rattles off the three platillos that she particularly likes. And Diane Keaton says, I'll have that second one. That sounds good. And then something dawns on Glinda at exactly that moment. She says, wait a minute. I feel like I know you from somewhere. Like maybe we've met. And Diane Keaton decides to deflect it humbly. Oh, gosh, I don't know. I suppose I have one of those faces, you know, that people think they've seen before. And then Glinda goes, no, now I know. We were locked up together. That just took my breath away when I heard it. And I don't believe we've had any further Diane Keaton sightings since that moment. But suddenly, kinship so quickly, Oscar-winning actress, attitudinal waitress, exactly what God had in mind. And if you'll permit me to speak for God, Jesus says it pretty clearly, that you may be one. That's the whole thing, that you may be one. That's the hope, anyway. All of us are called to be what Alice Miller, the late great child psychologist, calls enlightened witnesses, people who through your kindness and tenderness and focused, attentive love return people to themselves. You don't hold the bar.
Facilities where I see mass Catholic services in all the probation camps, juvenile halls, youth authorities. And usually on a Saturday, you know, I will do two masses in Las Afueras in the boonies, and then I race back to Dolores Mission because I have so many, you know, things. I've been there for 25 years and the homies asked me to do stuff. So my Saturday always looks sort of the same. 1 o'clock baptism and 2 o'clock quinceañera when a girl turns 15. At 3 o'clock wedding, 4 o'clock exorcism. Just checking to see if you're still listening to me. I've never done one of those. But anyway, so I raced home one day and it's 20 minutes to one. And I thought, well, I'm going to go to my office. I'm going to go through my mail all by myself. So I go there, and there I am, contento, feliz, when all of a sudden a woman barges into my office. I find out her name is Lisa. She's 34 years old. This is the first time she's ever stepped foot in my office. Oh, everybody knows her. They've seen her around. She's kind of a famous street person, prostitute, heroin addict, gang member, tattooed, felon. She's something of a famous peleonera and a gritona. She's always fighting. She's always screaming. You can hear her scream as she gets tossed out daily from the bar next door. You can hear her scream into a payphone on First Street, just let me stay tonight, pleading with family members and friends. And this is the first moment she's ever stepped foot in my office. And now it's 7 minutes to one. She comes in, she plunks herself down, she launches right in. I need help. Ooh, I've been to like 50 rehabs. I'm known all over, nationwide. Went to Catholic schools all my life, she says. Graduated from elementary, graduated from Sacred Heart High School in Lincoln Heights. And then she gets quiet and still. And she says, in fact, first time I ever used heroin was right after I graduated. And I've been trying to stop since the moment I began. And I watched as she leaned her head against the wall behind her, and her eyes became like two ponds, water rising to meet its edges and spilling over. And she cried, until finally she leveled her eyes at me, and she said with great deliberation, I am a disgrace. And suddenly, her shame meets mine, because when I had seen her step into my office that afternoon, I had mistaken her for an interruption. We're in this together. Kinship, only kinship. The measure of our compassion lies not in our service of those on the margins, but only in our willingness to see ourselves in kinship with them. For we do not seek a compassion. The compassion of Jesus is the one we seek, the one that can stand in awe at what the poor have to carry, rather than stand in judgment at how they carry it. In the early days, years ago, in our first office, a bunch of kids coming home to the projects from middle school and elementary school, they'd all come in, and one of the kids was a kid named Betito. And Betito was a little 12-year-old kid who, English was not his first language, but he always insisted on speaking English with me, even though he'd operate without benefit of a net sometimes. And he loved to find these expressions that he'd hear on TV, you know, a Pollo Loco commercial, and then he'd try them out on me. Hey, G, you know what you are? I go, what? You're the real deal at $1.99, you know. And he was a precocious kid. I remember he came in once. He said, hey, G, kick me down with 20 bones, yeah? I want to take my lady to the movies. I go, my God, your lady? How old are you? 12. 12? How old is your lady? 16? I go, 16? He goes, yeah, but she's short. Here's $20. Have a good time. Well, one Sunday night, Monday was a holiday or something, kids were playing, and Betha was out there with his cousin, and there were two gang members standing in front of a dumpster smoking cigarettes, and a van slowly came in, and two guys are in the van with their faces covered, and they open, roll down the windows, and they begin to shoot. And one of the gang members in front of the dumpster falls. Every man, woman, and child in the projects knows that if you hear shooting, you start running. But for some reason, Bethel didn't run. He didn't move. And because he didn't, a very large bullet entered his side and traveled through what they call a through and through. Later, a friend of mine who was the doctor in the ER said the caliber was so high and it was such a large bullet that the sheer reverberation of it traveling through his body had rendered Betito paralyzed, though it didn't touch his spine. I race to the hospital and I keep vigil with his grandmother. And he survives a 4-hour surgery. But an hour into his recovery in the ICU, I watched through the window as nurses and doctors run in and pound on his chest and plead and bargain with his heart, and it just won't cooperate, and he died. Now, Beto was 12 years old, and he was the real deal. But so were the two in that van that evening. And is there room in our compassion to include all of them? And so Jesus asks us that because he always had room. He excluded nobody. And so we imagine a circle of compassion, and we imagine nobody standing outside that circle.
I was recently reminded of mutuality and kinship by a few members of our Prairie community. A few weeks ago, there was a group of us who had volunteered to assist with childcare during the meeting on immigration. Two of those folks were Karen and Liam. As we entered the building that evening, the snow was falling heavily. We knew it was going to be a long and slick journey home, so it was agreed that as Tim and I lived on the other side of the city, we would stay only if we were needed. It became clear they had more help than necessary, so Tim and I would head back home. And as I was getting ready to leave, with Karen and Liam standing before me, and there were others from Prairie too, but it was those two that I saw their eyes, and I was touched by what I saw and experienced through them. It was joy. Their focus was not on the snow, but it was a sincere desire, an obvious privilege to share the evening with these children. Liam was walking through the childcare room with the hopes children would soon enter so he could enjoy their company. An atmosphere of belonging and kindness was in the making. As I continue to grow and transform, I plan to explore this thought. Compassion is not a relationship between the healer and the wounded. It's a covenant between equals. It's mutual. I will work to remember that the leadership I seek is done with love, compassion, and kinship. And while I focus on caring for people and my community, to never forget that the answer to most questions is compassion. Thank you.
Our closing words are by Father Greg Boyle and will be read by Mary Sue.
Compassion isn't just about feeling the pain of others. It's about bringing them in toward yourself. You stand with the least likely to succeed until success is succeeded by something more valuable, kinship. You stand with the belligerent, the surly, and the badly behaved until bad behavior is recognized for the language it is. The vocabulary of the deeply wounded and of those whose burdens are more than they can bear.